Hey everyone, and welcome to Be the Leader You Deserve podcast, where my mission is to inspire you to ask yourself, are you the leader you deserve? Hi, I'm Jill Handley, and I am so excited to be here with you today. This is season 7, episode 13, how to be the instructional coach all your teachers deserve. All right, so today I'm joined by Gina Rivera, who is the current principal of Charter Oak International Academy. Gina is a passionate educator focused on equity, collective teaching, culturally relevant pedagogy, and teacher leadership. Now, in addition to leading her own school, Gina is also an author and a presenter at both the local and national level. She's a very busy woman because she also serves on various boards, including the Math Teachers Circle for Social Justice, Teacher Leader Fellowship Academy, and she serves as the second vice president for the National Council of Supervisors of Mathematics. Wow, so much greatness. Welcome, Gina.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Jill. I'm so happy to be here today.
Yeah, so you've got so many accolades that I've already shared, but my goodness, why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself and the school that you lead?
Sure. So I recently was named the principal of Charter Oak International Academy in West Hartford, Connecticut. It's a brand new district for me, but it's actually my hometown. So I'm finally coming back home to where I went to school. And now I serve as the principal of one of the elementary schools in our town. That's a brand new position for me. Before that, I spent 23 years working for Bristol Public Schools. In that town, I served as a middle school mathematics teacher. I was an elementary math coach. I served at the supervisory level, and I was the elementary STEM supervisor for our district. And I also served as an administrator at Green Hills pre-K through eighth grade school. So I've had a wide variety of experience. In addition to that, I've written a couple of books. I like to blog, and mostly I like to serve. That's mostly a passion area for me. And so I'm really excited with this new role that I have as principal to serve the students at Charter Oak International Academy.
That's really exciting. Like I say, you're a busy lady with so much. I can't wait to get into this episode. Tell us a little bit more about International Academy, what the makeup of the school is.
Sure. So our school is an IB school, which is International Baccalaureate School. And so if you look up that model online, you'll see that it's really focused on global citizenship and really building students that have characteristics that really help empower them to be global citizens and really preparing them to be critical thinkers and to be compassionate and caring and also care about the environment. So what that means for the school is we're a magnet school within our town. So we serve the students within our neighborhood, and we also have students that come from all over town that want to engage in an IB educational experience. And so what does that mean for us? That means that we offer foreign language. So in pre-K through eighth grade, starting with our youngest learners, we offer Mandarin Spanish. We have Mandarin and Spanish. We have Suzuki violin as an instrument, so we add that too. We also have an amazing sign language program at our school. And we have lots of other initiatives that make it really a beautiful school to work at and lead. And so I'm just learning how beautiful it is, but I know there's going to be so much more once I meet all of our students come the first day of school.
That's an incredible opportunity, particularly at the elementary level. I know both of my daughters graduated from the high school they graduated from. They were IB students, and it was such an amazing experience at the high school level. I can only imagine how incredible it must be to start them out early with that kind of global thinking, that outside of the box. You know, I think kids are put in a box so often. So when they're starting off early with that ability to think outside of it, just how brilliant. Honoring their brilliance from early on has got to be such an exciting experience for you.
Yeah, so much of my work has been tied to that idea of culturally relevant pedagogy and that idea of really honoring people's cultures and getting to know people in authentic ways and sharing their stories, but also like learning the stories of other people and their lived experience that go beyond our own classrooms, but in our community and also all around the world. So this school really is the perfect place, I say, for me. I got really, really blessed to be named the principal there. And I just want to enjoy the time with the students and seeing them engage in this type of thinking and really having them, like you said, shine their brilliance as they learn how to be global citizens.
Absolutely. And with all of your experience, Gina, they're very blessed to have you leading the helm there for that. So congratulations on that new appointment.
Thank you.
So clearly, with all of your experience, you have so much to be proud of. But when you start to think about the leadership opportunities that you've had, what would you say is the thing that you're most proud of?
So as I think about my career, I thought about this ahead of time. The thing that makes me the happiest and I'm most proud of is empowering other people to be leaders. My whole entire career has really been dedicated to mentoring and helping other people who have influence to see the leadership skills that they have and help grow them into leadership opportunities. I really think that's the work, not only for me as a leader helping other leaders, but also like empowering my students to be leaders, because it's important that students see themselves as leaders in the classroom. So that's really where I get the most joy and where I feel the most proud. Like when I see someone who has influence and they use it in a way to positively impact change, that's what I'm most proud of over my career. And I think leadership is not a title. It's really a position of influence. I feel like if you influence others towards positive change, then you are a leader. You know, I hold the title of principal right now, but if I was to tell you the truth, I feel like I'm surrounded by leaders, and that would include students, families, teachers, counselors, paraprofessionals. I mean, there's people who have so much influence, and so mentoring them and using that for good is probably the thing I'm most proud of in my career.
Well, I think that's something that, you know, great leaders do well is they look for the strengths in others and empower them to lead so that it doesn't become, you know, an authoritative kind of a role, like you said, is that you're utilizing your position to influence and empower the leader within everyone else, which then helps that collective shared vision progress even further.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, one of the things I've seen in a video I watched you on, you mentioned something and you were referencing it in regards to students, but you had mentioned the term warm demander. Mm-hmm. So talk to the listeners a little bit about, first of all, what is a warm demander? And then how do you cultivate that with adults?
So the word warm demander really comes out of the culturally relevant pedagogy framework. It's used in a couple of different references. Lisa Delpit will talk about it, Zaretta Hammond, but it really goes back to 1975. And the last name is Kleinfeld. I remember the reference. And warm demander was used back then when they looked at teachers who have high expectations and high levels of love and care. And that's the way I would describe a really great teacher and a really great leader. Warm demanders are people who set high expectations, who really know and get to know their employees and their students, who have high levels of care, but also know that all students can rise to the occasion or all teachers can rise to the occasion. So that idea of a warm demander, if I think about like the best teachers I ever had, they were warm demanders. Mm-hmm. Like they really cared about me as a person and they didn't put limits on what I could do. So that's how I describe warm demanders. And I really think the best leaders that I've served under and the best teachers I've ever had are definitely people called warm demanders. And I always look for warm demanders. And I also try to cultivate that in others because I feel like it's just the right amount of love and care, but still like enough routine and strictness to really say like, but we're going to do this because it's important to your success.
So how do you cultivate that in a teacher that may be warm on one end, but not quite so much on the other, or maybe too warm in the expectations, but not quite warm enough in the love? Cultivate that to get kind of like that perfect balance.
So in Zaretta Hammond's book, she has a great graphic that you can use. I could get the name of it in a minute, but really it talks about there are these four quadrants. And there's different types of love and care. So if you have lots and lots of love and very low expectations, that would be a sentimentalist, right?
Okay.
And we've met sentimentalists before. So how do you cultivate that? Well, a lot of that is working with, if I'm a school leader, I'm going to work with coaches and really have them go in there and model some lessons that are more rigorous and really show the teacher how when you raise the bar, kids will meet that. They might need a little scaffolding in that, but it's important that we're still exposing them to grade level standard. So that's like an example of how I take like a sentimentalist and really show them like we need to have high expectations and them actually seeing it happen. Another way I've done that before is bringing a sentimentalist in a room where a teacher has very high expectations and see someone within their same building have high expectations and kids rise to the occasion. So they could see like, hey, within this building, we can still learn at high levels. Maybe I've been holding the bar a little bit too low, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So that's one way. Another way is like when somebody is a technocrat. So a technocrat is someone who has very high expectations, but maybe not as much of that love and care. So with those teachers, what I've worked on is really bringing in those SEL qualities and really spending time to get to know your students. So then once you get to know their interests and, you know, their ways of being and what they care about in their culture, you can start to design lessons and then the lessons become more authentic. So an example of that is I've worked with a technocrat before in terms of my coaching and said, you know, hey, did you know so-and-so is really interested in skateboarding? Let's pick out this math lesson. Let's do it together. And they saw the engagement go up and the student felt different because they knew the lesson was for them.
Okay.
So that's how you help people help to bring, like, for the technocrats, how to become more warm, and how for the sentimentalists, we help to raise the expectation. So really, those are just two different ways that I've used before. There's many ways, but I think using those four quadrants in Culturally Responsive in the Brain by Zaretta Hammond can be very helpful for school leaders and coaches to first identify where is the teacher and then pick out one of those qualities or characteristics and help build that in them, either show it to them, model it, coach, whatever you need to do.
That's fascinating. Thank you so much. I know our listeners are like, for me, I'm taking notes just as fast as you're talking. So I'm sure the listeners will be the same exact way. I said, it's almost like I get this behind the scenes look of all the greatness when I get to talk to everybody each week. It's like I get that sneak peek. So I was taking all the notes on that. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
In your time, Gina, as a leader throughout your coaching capacity and all the other responsibilities that you've held, I think we know that we learn as much from our experiences when things don't go so well the first time as we do when they do go well. So when you reflect upon all the things that you've learned as a leader, what would you say two or three things that you feel are most impactful that you would want to share with listeners who are leaders of their own building as well?
So the first thing that comes to mind was when I was first hired as a district-wide math coach, that first year of coaching, if I was to be honest, I felt like I was a total failure. And the reason why I say that is because I really didn't get to coach. The way that the model was designed was it was more a deficit model. So it was like for teachers that were really struggling, or if they were trying to get rid of a teacher, they would assign them a coach. And so a lot of my time was wasted. And I said, you know, I have 15 years worth of classroom experience and nobody will let me in their room because the way that the model was designed was broken. So the way that I really thought about that is how do I reimagine coaching? And I was joining a team that had that same model. So I read a book called Agents of Change by Lucy West, and she really had a different model. And so the next year I went in and I decided everyone is going to get coaching. I talked to the principal about it. He supported it. We spent time talking about what it would look like. And I literally did coaching cycles with every single person in the building. And we told them up front, like, coaching is for everyone. Athletes have coaches, leaders have coaches. If you think about people who learn an instrument, people who do anything, they get a coach. So teachers deserve a coach. So what I learned is, even though people were reluctant, once they all saw that everyone benefited from coaching, and especially the students, because they got a second teacher in the room, then it really helped to turn the narrative of coaching around. So that was like a huge lesson that I learned, that coaching, the way that it's designed, needs to be rolled out in a way that it's for everyone, for students and for teachers.
And I love that you said, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I love that you said deserve it. Like that right there makes it feel like, yeah, that is something I deserve as well, because you're right. So often the model is the only way that you get a coach is if you're deficient. And so in that case, who wants to sign up for something like that? So just that small change in semantics really make all the difference.
Yeah, that was probably like the most, and it's interesting because now at the new school that I'm going to, it's going to be the same model. I'm going to say everyone deserves a coach because they do. I mean, teachers work so hard. And the other reason why I say they deserve coaches is because we want equitable classrooms. Well, how do we create equity when each individual teacher is in a silo? But when we work in professional learning communities with a coach, and make sure we have a guaranteed and viable curriculum where we're saying, these are the standards, these are the strategies, let's put our heads together and really decide like, what are the best tasks and lessons and ideas and books we can bring to design the best possible lessons so the whole entire grade level benefits versus working in silos and then working so hard, but yet we're all trying to get to that same goal. So really working in teams is something that I learned through the coaching too. Like, I feel like that was not part of the leadership preparation courses that I have, but now that I'm doing the work, that piece is so important because if we don't do that, then we're almost guaranteeing inequitable classrooms because everybody is left to their own device. We don't know what's really happening. Are the standards really getting taught? We don't know. But when they work as a team and they really agree that this is the way we're going to do things, then that helps to move, I say, move towards equity, because equity is, I say, a lifelong journey, because we're always trying to guarantee that each and every learner gets to those grade level essential learnings or beyond.
Absolutely. And I also love when you equate it to like a sports team. You know, my mind immediately goes to basketball for some reason. Mm-hmm. But when you think about that, when you think about some of the greatest, you know, I remember someone saying sometime, and this is a football reference, but they're like, you know, you think Tom Brady doesn't have his own coach. Mm-hmm. And so when you start to think about some of the greatest, and then that really does reframe that no matter how great you are, you know, we're always trying to refine your practice. That deficit to asset model is such an empowerment. And I think that we think about that with kids, right? Mm-hmm. To always look through what are your strengths, but I don't know that we always set up models for teachers in the same capacity. So thank you for bringing that to light on this episode.
You're welcome.
You kind of alluded to that's one of the things that you wish that you would have gotten more of in leadership prep. And I think about all the things that I learned that once I got the job, I was like, oh, where's all the help for all of this? What are some other things that you're like, oh, I really wish they would have taught that in leadership prep?
One of the things that I think about, you know, especially in an administrative role, is you work a lot with family and community. One of the things I thought about is how do we engage families in meaningful ways where they really feel seen and heard and they feel like they have a voice at the table? Yes. You know, many of the programs were like, hey, you know, like make sure you communicate with families or make sure you have them into the school and you host these family nights. But we have multilingual families who really struggle with that. We have some families that experience school trauma that struggle with that. So, you know, as I navigate this leadership role, I'm really pushing myself to engage families who typically haven't been part of the school experience. And so some of that looks like, number one, trying to get to know authentically who they are and what they care about. Number two, designing affinity spaces so they can come into the school and feel comfortable and be with their like peers. Number three, it might mean going out to the community and actually visiting them where they feel most comfortable. You know, I feel like as educators, we always feel like, oh, the families have to come to the school. But sometimes we have to go to the family because there's power in that. I think we learned that over COVID, right? We had so many home visits happening, right? And
yes.
The looks on kids' faces when we showed up at their house, I'll never forget those faces and the way that they felt so proud that we showed up and we took the time. And I hope we don't lose that post-COVID, because there's something to be said about showing up in neighborhoods where our students live and saying, I'm coming to see you because it's important. Where have you been? Are you okay? Do you need something? So those are the things that I feel like the leadership prep programs. The other piece is, and I'll always say this, the equity piece.
Yes.
I feel like it's a word that we say, but I say equity is a verb. I want to know what are the actions that I can take as a school leader to actually ensure equitable outcomes for each and every learner? And how do we reimagine schools to really make that happen? We talk a lot of times about equity as like a noun, but I want to hear it as a verb. I want to hear about it as actions. What are school leaders doing to reach, you know, students that typically, you know, maybe haven't been traditionally successful in school? And so that would be the other big one that I wish we could get into, honestly, a national dialogue and share ideas as leaders across this nation to be able to get us closer to helping each and every learner.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to circle back around to the family engagement piece, yes, only because that's super near and dear to my heart. I'm currently at, in my doctoral work, and that's
oh, wow,
really, that's where my that's where my focus is around sense of belonging for families. And so reading a lot about it, I would wholeheartedly agree with you, because not just the family engagement piece, because, you know, we get the whole, yeah, it's important, yeah, it's important, mm-hmm, but really from a leadership perspective of how do you set up sustainable for family engagement that go beyond the teacher, because let's face it, teachers, their plates are so full right now, and they understand that family engagement is important. But to your point, I remember when I was in principal prep, it was all those, what I like to call pop-up shop things, like, oh, we're having a family literacy night. And not that that's a bad thing, but right, it made it feel like the only way to be, I think really what I got was a whole lot of family involvement, which was indicating that the families were just showing up at the school, but there wasn't a whole lot of engagement, to your point, of honoring the strengths that the families have and can bring to their child, because let's face it, they're their child's first expert. And I don't think that I got a whole lot of that. And I think that kind of bleeds into your other piece, which is the equity piece, is how are we creating those equitable conditions, and that it's threaded throughout everything we do. It's not like we're doing school and then we're also doing equity over here, because I think sometimes that's the way it's presented, is that it's like one more thing that's on top of everything else, instead of it being threaded throughout everything else that we do, looking through everything through an equity lens.
Yeah, I love that you said that, because there's, oh, it's like every time something comes up, if you actually pause to think as a leader and say, wait a second, am I missing something? Is someone going to get left behind with this decision? Like even a simple thing, like we were discussing a school-wide app, communication app, right? So if I put on my equity lens, does it translate properly? Is it easy to use? Will it easily download on a smartphone? Does it require email or not? Like we investigated the app to see which one is the most user-friendly, that the most number of families can engage and be successful and communicate with their teacher. I mean, that sounds like a silly thing, but that's equity. Because
I was going to say, that sounds small, but it's so huge, especially when you start to kind of take all of your, I mean, not every single like minute decision. I mean, theoretically, yes, but you know, starting with some of your bigger decision making and just what you just said, taking it through that. In our district has created something called the Racial Equity Analysis Protocol, which are about 8 questions. So when we're making decisions, you know, it asks those, you know, is there a group you're leaving out with this decision? Is there a group that's being marginalized? You know, what outcomes will this have for all students? And so it's interesting when you take something through that, because I know some examples of our whole district, we looked at, you know, school mascots, we looked at uniform policies, lots of different things. And once you start to think about decision making through the lens of, are there groups that this decision is marginalizing, it really starts to have a powerful impact on your practice.
Yeah, I it sounds interesting. I'd love to see the 8 questions, because I'm sure I would love to use them. I think that's a great protocol. And like you said, it's not for every tiny, tiny thing, but like a school-wide communication app is.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's really important. So I appreciate you sharing that. And I'd love to see the questions.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll send them to you, but then I'll also, you know, put them in the link for our episode as well. So yeah, That'll be awesome. So you've talked about so many great things, but we also know that, you know, when you're leaders, that also comes with a certain set of challenges. So when you think about the challenges that you faced as a leader throughout your tenure, what do you consider to be one of your toughest challenges? And then how did you go about overcoming that?
So I would say the toughest challenge was this past school year. And when students returned, having them struggle so much with social emotional kinds of challenges in school really was the toughest thing I've ever faced. And I'll say that because, you know, I don't have a background in counseling. I don't have a background in psychology, but yet so many of them were struggling with just simple things like routines, getting back into school habits. I think some of them really struggled with coming back to school. They had some fears around that. And so helping them to welcome them back and make them feel comfortable back at school and acclimated, it was challenging. I'm not going to lie. Like, our team definitely was challenged. Sometimes they would want to elope, right, and leave the classroom. There were times where they would get upset and just, like, you know, get upset at the teacher because they're having trouble regulating their emotions. And so I think for years in education, we've talked about social emotional learning. But what I learned this past year is it's not a time of day, but a way of being. And they really needed time all day to be able to really take breaks, really focus on themselves and what makes them happy, and also having some strategies to help them when they're really struggling, when they get really upset or really sad. The good news is, you know, this past year I had an excellent student support team that really helped students with that, between lunch groups and individual counseling and outside services. So I got better over time, but it was definitely challenging as a school leader, because when you're trying to discipline someone who's completely dysregulated and you know they're struggling because they're just struggling because of coming out of COVID, it's really hard, Jill. I don't know if you felt that way, but like, I was like, how do I suspend someone who just is so sad?
And it was a big struggle, you know. And the other thing was the thing that we had not anticipated too, like, you know, we had some anticipation, not to the degree of, you know, what we got honestly with students, but the other thing that we didn't really anticipate was the adult trauma that took place, you know, with our teachers, you know, through COVID. And so coming back and helping support their regulation of emotions. And so you're having to pour extra into your teachers so that they're not just left completely empty trying to pour into the kids. And I don't know about you all, but, you know, we know there's a staff shortage in every capacity, right? But in the mental health realm, there is such an incredible shortage. We were having to be really creative because our needs far outweighed our resources, if you will. So we had to make some, you know, budgeting decisions unlike we ever had, and put a lot more resources into personnel that could help support that social and emotional regulation unlike we've ever had before. And to your point, it's not like, okay, we're back a year and suddenly everything's back to normal. You know, this is a new normal that we're going to be reeling from for years, trying to kind of help make this new normal an okay thing. But it was a hard one. I think it took a toll on everyone, because as the leader, you know, you're trying to support the teachers, trying to support the students, trying to support the families in a way that, and I'm like you, I don't have a counseling background. I'm, you know, unfortunately I have an amazing counselor, but, you know, just trying to think about how to wisely utilize her expertise, but then she's only one person. And then you think about, you know, one of the things we looked at was, and then who counsels the counselor? Because when she takes on all that, sometimes I like to call it tertiary trauma, because, you know, that the kids have poured into the teachers have then poured into the counselor. And so now the counselor has everybody's trauma, right? Yeah. So making sure that our counselors and mental health professionals don't burn out for all of that secondary and tertiary trauma was a big one.
Yeah. I love that you added on to that and talked about the teachers too, because, like, if I think about it, the teachers that were in a better place and felt better, their classrooms were more regulated, but because kids really feed off of, like, how their teacher feels, right? It's the same with leaders. If the leader is well, it helps, doesn't fix, but it helps with the climate and the culture of the building. So I love that you said that. And I agree with you with the counselors too. Like, they desperately needed times where they just needed a break, because it was a lot in the beginning. But I'm hoping that this school year will feel different. But I also know that we need to enter it differently, and we have to make sure we're taking, you know, there's a lot of talk about self-care, but it's really about well-being. Like, how are we feeling and being well and putting up boundaries in ways where, you know, people start to feel better, not only just about themselves, but also about their profession.
Absolutely, because we know teacher burnout's at an all-time high. But I also like to say that I'm inclined to think leadership burnout's probably getting to an all-time high as well. And that's because of, you know, I think people's inabilities or not being so good at setting boundaries. And so that's something that we've been talking about this season when I've been talking with leaders across the country is, you know, continue to be at our best, because you're right, the teachers need that. They sense when we're not at our best, and then it's almost like a trickle down effect. Then we've got to make sure we're putting some proactive boundaries in place to kind of preserve our own peace, if you will. Mm-hmm. So what are some strategies you've found, Gina, for boundaries for yourself so that you can be the best for your staff?
So I'm going to share the name of a resource that I just love. I was able to be a reviewer on the resource, and it's called Educator Wellness, and it's by Dr. Timothy Canold and Tina Bugren. Mm-hmm. And in that book, it really talks about the importance of wellness. And one of the things that I started to do is, so this would be helpful for leaders, and I shared this recently at the Teacher Leadership Fellowship Academy, is one thing you can do is automate tasks that are really, really simple. So you don't have to make decisions. So for example, like even simple things like deciding what you're going to have for lunch for the week and just making that decision and just leaving it alone. Because if you have to every day, like hem and haw over, like, what am I going to have? I don't know what I'm going to have. That just takes up decision-making power that you actually need for really important things as a leader. It's just easier if you decide on what they're going to be, even a simple thing like outfits, not a big deal. Decide on what you're going to wear for the week and be done with it. So it's not a decision that you're making in the morning. So that way that morning time can really be focused on positive affirmations, getting ready for the day, you know, looking over your calendar and setting an intention for the day. So even things like that. So like every morning, like I wake up, I journal, I exercise, and I set my intention for the day. I always say, you know, where am I going to leave a gratitude? Look for good. I always do that. And that's helped me tremendously. And that's a mindset. The other piece is I've set boundaries around some exercise time for myself, because for me, exercise makes me feel better. I ride my bicycle. People know that I'm a cyclist. So just riding my bicycle and really being intentional about scheduling that time for myself, because as school leaders, you know, we have all these meetings in our schedule. Well, I've decided to schedule myself, that I deserve time in that schedule too. And just knowing that that exists helps me know that I'll feel more balanced, because if I'm better, the school will be better. So that's like two simple things. The book has many, many beautiful nuggets. I mean, another one they'll say is take care of yourself and drink water. Mm. I did a terrible job during COVID while drinking. And that sounds silly, but like even simple things like hydration make you more alert. You make better decisions. You feel happier. People want to be around you because you're happy and well. You can't make good decisions when you have a headache and you're dehydrated all the time, but yet that's how many of our educators are functioning, and so are our leaders. So that's what I mean by even simple things. So, I mean, the book has so many more gems, but that's just some simple things that I've done that have helped me tremendously.
I'm definitely going to have to check that out. And two things that you said that I absolutely love. One has to do with the quick decision-making, because, you know, people laugh at me all the time. Like I'll come home and my family's like, what do you want to do for dinner? And I say, I don't want to make one more decision today, you know? So, yeah. So that sounds like a simple thing, but for people who aren't in a position to have to make decisions all day, they don't understand that like I have no more capacity. I don't care where we eat or what we have. I just don't want to make the decision. So that sounds like a small thing, but I'm just sitting here myself, like calendaring out lunch and dinner for a whole week. My goodness. And like even my outfits, I try to do that myself too, but I guess I wasn't consciously doing it to save decision-making brain power. But now that I recognize that that's what I'm doing, I'm definitely going to continue making that decision. And then the other thing you said that I think I hope people really heard was that when you schedule this time for yourself, it really makes you a better leader for the school. Because I think so often we get caught up and feeling like self-care or intentional time for self is selfish, regardless of what we hear. So if people hear in the vein that you're pouring into yourself so that you can be a better leader for your school, perhaps they'll take some of that feeling of, oh, I don't have time for myself, or I can't spend this time on myself. Because let's face it, we all became leaders for the same reason, because we want to champion the children and the teachers of our building. So if we can feel like, if it makes people feel better that the reason why you're pouring into yourself is to be a better leader, then that's almost like it's giving you extra permission to take time for yourself. So I really hope people were listening to that piece specifically. Now, you've given us so many great resources today, Gina. Like I say, I can't wait to check them all out. As educational leaders, we're our own best resources. That's why I think professional learning networks are so important. So who are two or three people that maybe you've not mentioned today that you either you're connected with on social media or you're connected with in another professional capacity that you feel like if people don't know who they are or check them out, they need to check them out?
So I would say, I mean, there's so many, as you know, like people that are just so great in doing the work. But I would say in terms of, even though her work is coaching, Elena Aguilar and all of her work is outstanding because she really has different books, that are helpful, I think, for leaders, because they really help you to understand how to work with coaches, instructional staff in your building, and also work with your teachers. So she's got a robust website with free resources, and then she has several books. So she would be one person that I would say is an outstanding leader. The second person that I would say is somebody I mentioned earlier, but I want to shout it out in a different way. So Dr. Timothy Canold, who has written two brilliant books called, he's written many books, but two brilliant books. One is called Heart and the other is called Soul. And it really talks about how to understand the heart and soul of teaching and how to connect with teachers. It actually has a journaling option. He also was part of the Educator Wellness book, which if you're a school leader, you should definitely read that book. Because as leaders, we need to understand, number one, how to embody wellness and well-being, but we also need to help our teachers get there. So that would be the first two. And then in terms of mathematical leaders, because I'm a huge math person, there's a lot of people out there, but I would say the inspiring person that I'm thinking of is Dr. Robert Barry. Okay. He's a math leader who's focused on equity and social justice, and especially for African-American boys. The way that he talks about the way he mentors them and really includes culturally relevant pedagogy and the way that he ensures that they get into high-level math courses, because we know that math changes the quality of your life, that we can, there's a lot to be learned from him and his colleagues and peers, because he really, he's currently working out of the University of Arizona, I believe, but he works with students closely and he's connected to them. And I just think his work is inspiring. And even though he's a math person, I know some people are like, oh, math, but it's important, because if you can get math right, you can get it all right. Because if many people say that's the hardest subject for many students, but if we can learn about the work that he's doing and the way that he's connecting to the students and the way that he's, you know, mentoring, I think a lot of that would help many of our students in our schools.
Absolutely. And you know, that STEM is the gateway to what so many jobs that aren't even created yet. So I agree with you, getting everyone plugged in there, and then everything else will just kind of fall into alignment. So thank you for that. I'm definitely going to have to check out his work. Mm-hmm. All right. Last question, Gina. What are three words that other people who know you would use to describe you?
I would say intentional, kind, student-centered.
Thank you. This has been an amazing chat. I've learned so much. Like I say, I've got pages and pages of notes that I can't wait as a leader myself to go back and kind of dig into. I know Elena Aguilar's work. I'm pretty familiar with her stuff, and you're right. It's great on so many different capacities. She really offers, particularly around, like you said, the coaching aspect through different lenses. And so I'm really appreciative of all of that. So thank you so much for being with me today.
Well, I just want to say thank you for inviting me. Thank you for sharing your brilliance with me as well. And I just want to say thank you to the listeners out there who will listen to this and hopefully glean even one or two pieces of information and make a commitment to make the change in service of our students. So
Absolutely. And Gina, because you've shared so much greatness, if people want to follow up with you, or get in contact with you after this, what's the best way to reach you?
They can find me on Twitter. I'm at Math Coach Rivera, and that's my Twitter handle. So again, at Math Coach Rivera, and you can direct message me. That's one way. I think that's the way Jill found me, which I'm very proud to say. But I also work at Charter Oak International Academy in West Hartford, Connecticut. And right on our school website, there'll be a place to email me directly, and you can email me at school, and I'll be happy to respond to your emails. So either of those would be fine. I would be honored if you have any questions or you want to ask any follow-up questions based on anything that I might have mentioned today.
All right, Gina, I hope you have a fabulous school year.
Thank you, and I wish all the school leaders out there not only a fabulous but a peaceful, and I hope that you have a balanced school year and that you get to really just help your dreamers fulfill their dreams.
All right, thanks for being with me today, Gina.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye now.
If you enjoyed this episode, How to Be the Instructional Coach All Your Teachers Deserve, please share it with your friends by using the social media buttons you see at the bottom of the post. Now, if this is your first episode or you've not listened to any of the other episodes in this season or the first through six seasons, I really encourage you to check them out and let me know what you think. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. In fact, let's go ahead and do that right now just to make sure you get automatic episode updates every week for Be the Leader You Deserve. And friends, if we aren't connected, let's change that status. Let's connect now on Twitter and LinkedIn so that we can start and continue to learn from one another. And finally, friends, please take a minute to leave an honest review and rating on Apple Podcast. They really help me out when it comes to the ranking of the show, and I make it a point to read every single one of the reviews I get. All right, leaders, have a great week, and don't forget to ask yourself, am I the leader I deserve, and what am I doing about it?